Hello again, everybody. This is the Shooter's Touch, and we have another great episode for you this week. We sit down with assistant coach at Simpson College, Coach Brandon Stromer, who has really been successful at every level of basketball, whether it be elementary, middle school, in high school, all 4 years, his team was one of the best in the state. Moving on to Winona State, where he went to college, national champions there, and then even to his coaching career. You know, he was a grad assistant at Drake University when they had that NCAA tournament run in 08. And then now, like I mentioned, at Simpson College, as well as the assistant there in Indianola. We also talk a little bit about the potential matchup between Garner Hayfield and my high school, AGWSR, in 02, I believe. Two top five teams supposed to square off on a Saturday night, and it never ended up happening. I'm excited to hear your thoughts on that, why that didn't happen. Another couple topics we jump into with Coach, our recruiting to Simpson College, you know, how that differs, how he sells Simpson to potential recruits, as well as people who are in a transfer mindset. We have a reference to a former guest, Coach Jason Steggy at Wartburg, who had a couple stories about Coach Strome, which we always appreciate. So thank you, Coach. And also have a surprise pick from Coach Strome for the NBA champion this year. Again, awesome conversation with Coach. We hope you enjoy it. And if you do enjoy it, we would really appreciate a 5-star rating wherever you listen to your podcast. Here is the Shooter's Touch episode with Coach Brandon Stromer. Well, welcome back, Shooters. Again, we have a special guest here, Coach Brandon Stromer from Simpson College. Coach, welcome to the Shooter's Touch.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate being on the show. Big fan of you guys.
Awesome. Well, thank you. We appreciate you coming on too. And, you know, we can just jump right into it here. You know, kind of follow the same schedule here as other podcasts. But I guess let's learn a little bit about you. When did basketball come into your life? When did you know kind of basketball was your deal?
Well, I kind of had a little different, unique, you hear a lot of podcasts, you hear a lot of other coaches say, yeah, I was always growing up with you know, basketball in my life and as a little kid, and I really didn't have it. I kind of grew up on a farm, and actually, not to get down the gloomy path, but my real dad died when I was about 9 months old, so my mom remarried into a guy with three older kids than what I was, probably 10, 15, 20 years older, so I kind of grew up on this farm by about 2 or 3 years old. I was kind of the black sheep of the family, if you will. I never really fit into that farm scene, the livestock, the stuff like that. And being I think at fifth grade, I was probably 5'11", 6 foot. So you don't quite fit it was just kind of, again, black sheep of the family. So realizing that size and really started taking liking to the sport, to the basketball, having that size. And it just kind of took off from there. And then, kind of growing up, we had a pretty good youth team in Garner. At Garner Hayfield, and we started going to these local tournaments in the Osages of the world and the Mason Cities and the Clear Lakes and the Algonas, and we were actually doing pretty well because we had some other good size, and it kind of took off from there. And I think that's where a lot of kids are, you know, if you come up on good teams and have a good experience, you keep progressing that skill, and you enjoy going to those Saturday and Sunday tournaments, and that's kind of what started for me was having those success with those tournaments at such an early age with our youth teams.
Well, awesome. And you mentioned that, younger teams you were on, when you were, I guess, coming through the ranks, was AAU even a thing for you, or was there any AAU at all?
Yeah, there were very few teams at that early age, and that's actually what, it led to some tense, kind of awkward moments with my high school, but just local youth teams about junior high-ish is when we started kind of getting myself and another Sean Wumpkus. We were both kind of two of the tallest kids in the state for our age. And we started to get poked and prodded by these, we had a local Des Moines team called Hoops Iowa with Joe Dunham was the name. And he started to kind of probe us, but hey, maybe you guys, we played him in an Iowa games thing. I think we had a lot of battles at the Iowa games, and we end up playing them, and they say, hey, you guys, you need to come play with us. Well, now your teammates you've been playing with for for so long. Why are they suddenly better than we are to play with, but yet they're playing all these tournaments. They're playing in actually official AAU tournaments. I remember going to like 15 and unders in Indianapolis, and we played in Orlando and all these bigger tournaments that we as our local town team couldn't do. And you knew from the progression of your skill set and trying to maximize your potential as a player, it was tough, and you weren't making a lot of friends that at that time, but yeah, it was what you needed to do. You needed to play those better competition. It really led to some resentment for a while, but I think back and forth it paid off in the long run when you get to the high school levels.
Did you have an opportunity? Did you play Martin Brothers or do?
I did, which again led to more resentment. So now you have a little bit of that resentment from your high school to your first AAU team, and then your second AAU team to your first AAU team. Now your first AAU team's like, well, why are they better? Well, now we're playing with the Greg Bruners of the world and the Jeff Horners and the Mike Hendersons and the Ben Jacobsons, and we're going to even bigger tournaments. So you kind of got to do what's best for you and your career and your skill set. And funny how when you start coming back to these small town gyms with your high school team, you're so much better than what you were before that suddenly those guys are okay with you being gone so much because your high school teams are much better now. So I got a lot of respect for the AAU. I know a lot of coaches, especially high school coaches, don't like it, but I really think that AAU is kind of what it helps you progress, and especially as a college coach, a lot of kids they get confined in their own little towns and playing a lot of sports. I think playing a lot of sports is good, but I like a kid that can relate to your future teammates in college by having more teammates than just your high school teammates and playing AAU. I think AAU does a good job for that and getting you to learn how to play with other teammates and other from other towns. And you might even play your rival school's best player that you might hate during your senior or your high school season, but now you got to be his teammate in April through August. I think that's good for your development too, personally. And I think AAU has a lot of good things for that.
And speaking of teammates, I think at one time, you have to correct me if I'm wrong, I know that we've talked about it on here, but Future Stars, they used to have those shootouts down at the Knapp Center. I feel like I remember one year you had Henderson on your team at one of those shootouts, and it was just an absolute onslaught between you guys. But I think probably Horner and Bruner probably found a way on the same team too. So
yeah,
there were some big-time games at those, though.
We kind of might have stacked those Mart Brother players with other players for the good of the cause a little bit, admittedly, tongue-in-cheek there. But, yeah, I remember Mikey was on our team. Actually, funny story now, we live in West Des Moines now, and I was walking our dog the other day, and I got this really manly dog. It's about a white little poodle about a foot long, and that's it. But looking down, I see this guy look at me. I look at him, and it's Mike Henderson. He lives about three or four houses down from me right now, so in the same area. So, yeah, Mikey lives next to me, and we had some good teams and some good players. And it's funny looking back how kind of where we went and who we played against and whatnot. So, yeah, it's I remember that Knapp Center time. I think I rolled my ankle and pretty bad at the end of that whole that weekend. But was playing well until, you know what it was, you guys asked the shoe question, the Jordan 14s. That was my shoe, the Jordan 14s, but they were really low. They were really low, but I rolled my ankle wearing those darn things. And you know, kind of like, you know, your wives, your girlfriends, when you go to a wedding, you complain about their feet hurting all the time. Well, yeah, why don't you wear a different shoe? Yeah, but they look so good. Well, I was the same way. They hurt your feet. They might have rolled your ankle, but God, they look so good. And it was that same kind of deal, that high heel mentality that women use. So
we were probably the same way.
I was wearing those, and that's what made me roll my ankle at the end of that weekend.
That was good. That was a lot of fun. It's funny you mentioned Mikey. Actually, last winter, I coached my daughter's sixth grade team, and we were playing up at the Attack Building up in Ames, and show up to one of our games, and Mikey's the official. And so
we were
kind of chatting it up the whole time, and he was saying, yeah, he lives out in West Des Moines or whatever. But good dude, that's for sure.
Yeah, Mikey was actually a year younger than we were. He was 03, I believe, and we were 02s, and he held his own. And he was just really quick, lightning quick guard who he was tough to stay in front of. So
yeah. I remember specifically his mid-range jumper or his mid-range game in high school was like something I've never seen before. And those, absolutely. You know, you saw those in the AAU circuit and you saw those in the Future Stars camps and stuff like that, which like you said, is good. It's good for those kids and, you know, fun to watch obviously too. So,
yeah. And you know, it's good for you. Like I said, it's good for your development coming from a small town Garner, which is a phenomenal place to grow up, but you know, you don't get experience other cultures. And now suddenly you're practicing in Waterloo East area, Waterloo East High School, a couple times a week. And it's like, okay, this is not, we're not back in we're not Kansas anymore, if you will, but it's great for your development and kind of leaving your own town. And it was good for you in all facets.
Yeah. Well, I want to clear the air about something here, Coach. Probably your senior year. You graduated high school in 02 or 03?
02, yep.
02, okay. So
you're senior. I had a phenomenal flat top, if I will say so myself.
I remember that.
I can tell people, it's old enough now, I can tell people, you know, that was the style back in the day, and you just got to roll with it. But it wasn't the style back in the day, not even close. It was still ridiculous then.
Maybe in Garner. Maybe.
Back in the day, yeah.
all right, your senior year, my junior year, you guys are number one. I believe my high school AGWSR is number two.
I know where you're going with this.
You were set to make a trip to Ackley.
Yes.
On a night that was predicted, maybe some ice, maybe some freezing rain. We're just getting through shoot around in the afternoon, and all of a sudden our coach walks in and says that you guys aren't coming. God. Now, the way I play that in my head is that you guys probably didn't want to lose your number one ranking by coming to AGWSR. Right. Is that accurate, or am I just – I mean, is that just from my
– I think semi-accurate. If I recall, we just played Forest City. And you know what, Adam? I forgot this. I think I rolled my ankle bad the Forest City game. We had a bad injury. I don't think that played into it, but it was more – I think it really was legitimate bad weather. But I remember thinking, oh, we were kind of lucky this game got called because – and again, I don't remember the decision makers. Our coaches could have said, no, we don't want to go. But I remember thinking, thank God, now we can ice that ankle or whoever it was. I don't remember. But, yeah, let's be honest. We were scared. We wanted to preserve that ranking, and it's all about the AP and the polls, and we were all about that.
And I don't know, you know, how the game would have ended. I mean, I can assume how it would have ended, but I mean, you had and Sean on that team at, I mean, what, like 6'9", 6'10"?
Well, I was 6'7", and Sean was about 6'9". And actually, what a lot of people don't remember, we had another kid called Justin Eifler who actually. Actually, he was about 6'6", 6'7", who was just kind of a late grower, and he grew about an inch or two every year in high school. He actually played some ball a little bit at Central College, and he came back in the summertime, and he was a way better player even in college and even in high school, and he'd really developed. And I think that's typical for Division III players, especially that late development, and they might be a skilled future in the future as a Division II player. But they don't grow as fast or mature quite as fast and late, and they really. Again, they turn to be really players, but yeah, we had a pretty tall crowd.
Justin was coaching in Nashville, right?
He's still in Nashville teaching and our Nashville teaching, and but he coached there for a while.
He was on our team too. I used to travel and do shoot camps, and we did one at Nashville with him and both the boys and the girls side. And so, my coaching partner was Lee Nelson from Northwood. I know Lee. And so, so we definitely hashed up the old Gardner days, talked about that. And then of course, obviously your point guard, Matt Pronk, of a player himself as well. And brought a little bit of the attitude, I guess you could say, to the team.
That'd be a good way. Yeah. I mean, we had a little spitfire. Everyone needs a little spitfire. And Matt did a great job of quarterbacking our offense. But again, it was really the success we had had in those youth and elementary days and going up. And now we knew what we wanted, and we learned to play with each other. And I think all of us, well, I think four of us started from sophomores on to seniors, and that really helped us with that and that success we had in high school.
Yeah. And maybe we'll let the listeners decide who would have won that game. I will say that you mentioned all your height. I was probably our tallest player as a point guard at 6'3". So
didn't you have a 6'7" kid? Didn't he punt for football?
He was probably 6'4".
6'4"? He looked 6'7". He was a wiry, long 6'4". Okay.
Yep. But so we would have had some problems down low. If we were maybe hitting some threes, we may have had a chance. But I just want to clear the air about that. It seems like we're on the same page. So
no, it had been a little scandalous for a while, and it had been a big elephant in the room, and I'm glad we addressed it and got out of the air. That's good.
Me too.
Hey, so let me ask both you guys before we move away from high school basketball. If I throw out the name Jake Wenig,
coming.
What thoughts come to mind for obviously both of you guys, but obviously Coach, you maybe a little bit more than Adam.
I forgot Adam had a Wenig experience too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what I think of is triple stagger from the corner in a half quarter, ridiculous. You know, what's funny about that shot is I was actually boxing my guy out. Didn't miss a box out. Maybe I missed a few, but didn't miss that one when it wasn't needed. But I remember I'm boxing him out in, and now we're at Veterans Auditorium. Now Vets is a whole different deal than Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo is a great situation now for high school athletics, but Vets was just something different. It was just a different feel. But I remember he's boxing the guy out, and the shot hits the front of the rim, and it bounces up above the backboard. I mean, it's a half-court shot, almost just inside the half-court line. And I remember our crowd, when it hit the front of the rim, our crowd on one side is just going absolutely nuts. But me, being underneath the hoop, going, don't be cheering, because that thing was going to fall straight down right in the net, and it did. And then all of a sudden, the other side just went crazy, rightfully so, when he hits it, and we lose at the buzzer. Actually, I don't know if you guys know this, but I've got the misfortune of losing at the buzzer for three different levels. So I lost a state championship at the buzzer, and then I lost at the buzzer my senior year at Winona State on CBS to Barton College on a layup. We're up 7 with 45 seconds left. And then at my first year at Drake against Western Kentucky, Ty Rogers hits that side half quarter, knocks us out in a 5-12 upset. So about three different years in about 5 or 6 years, we had some heartbreak on the end. So I'm not sure you want me on the bench when it gets down to that late game situation, just for
alone. Future reference. Yeah, and I obviously, you know, sophomore year, we ran into Jake in the state finals too, and, got it handed to us, just for lack of a better term. And then I actually ended up playing AAU with Jake my junior year.
Were you a River Rat?
No.
He was on the River Rat team. I didn't know if you were a River Rat.
He was for a little bit, and then we may have poached him a little bit from them. and he was that guy who he show up a minute before game time, just walk in, stroll in, and the other team's probably like, "Who is this guy? What is he doing on the bench?" And then he'll get out there and he'll cross some guy over three times, do two spin moves on the way to the basket, and do a reverse layup and make it look easy.
Just so talented, he didn't need to warm up on some of that stuff.
That's exactly right.
And you know who's like that now in around Des Moines? Jason Bauer. Who played morning league. It might be 6:30 in the morning, and Jason Bauer, he walks in and he's just killing it. Yeah, that's how Bauer is.
That is exactly right. You're exactly right. well, hey Coach, let's talk about the transition. You know, you mentioned Winona. You know, from Garner to Winona. I mean, obviously you're a skilled basketball player. What were a couple things that you remember that kind of shocked you about the college game? You know, what were you not prepared for?
Well, I'm not sure as far as skill. I was a good body, and I had good post moves. A lot of people don't know. I had some Division I looks out of the way, and it was my sophomore year. Sam Weaver, you'll appreciate this. Sam Weaver offered me one my sophomore year, and I'm not – even if I would have gone to – I think I had like Idaho and another smaller school had me I think it was just a random offer, one of those, we're going to throw out three or four offers and whoever takes it first takes it. And I think everyone I had, they had a new coach the very next year. So it would have been a bad situation regardless. But I ended up going to Winona State and actually it kind of fell in love with the campus 2.5 hours away from home. And you know, to answer your question, I think my game, I probably would have been what maybe from Division I was I played the game I had, I probably need to be 6'10 or 6'11 to play like that. Just a back to the basket. You know, decent post moves, if you will, maybe, you know, for high school. But again, if I was 6'6", 6'7", I needed to be more of a three-man with guard perimeter skills I didn't have. But again, went to Winona State thinking, hey, I know how to score and I can score in high school. And guess what? That doesn't work that way. Whether it be Division I, two, or three, you got to realize that everyone has a little golden statue at their hometown like you did. And everyone has that little was the best player in their town. And now you're just a number. And I think, you know, we deal with that right now, even at Division III and at Simpson, you know, and at any level, you deal with that player. And I think that was just as bad with that. You got to realize that, you know, you have a little ways to go before you're going to be successful in the college level. But yeah, that was a big eye opener. Is now everyone's bigger, faster, stronger than you are. And you got to remember, kids got to remember they're 3 or 4 years older than you are too. Now you're the young buck. So
yeah. And, you know, having all that experience, you know, in the weight room, those whatever year, 2, 3, 4 years of playing that competition, you know, it definitely has its advantages. So, and I mean, we talk about it all the time with other guests too, you know, I noticed the intensity was, you know, so much higher when I got to college, you know, and that was honestly kind of expected, you know, as you kind of said, coming from a small town, you know, maybe one of the top two of best players on your team, you know, maybe the majority of your high school career, it's eye opening and it's a full-time job, and you know, it's it it can be hard for people, and which is, you know, which is why I think there's a lot of transferring nowadays, is that, you know, it, with these kids coming in, they think the situation is too hard, so they go somewhere else where maybe it might be a little bit easy. And you know, it's, it, I don't know, it helps the game a little bit, I think, you know, just kind of people moving around, you know, but also kind of plays into the you know, I'm all that culture, I guess you might say.
Well, and I might be more candid than what some past interviews might be, but I think a lot of people take a lot of bad advice from their inner circle. You know, the inner circle gets wrapped up in a Twitter press conference or announcement or whatever, mm-hmm. and they just take a lot of, you know, guess what, you're not the best thing since sliced bread, even though your family is, and they love you to death, but they're not going to tell you the bad news that you're not ready to play yet. I think that's what you see a lot of, and that's why the transfer rate is astronomical. I think it was 750 whatever last year, and it's grown by 100 about every year, the Division I transfer rate for basketball alone. So a lot of people get bad advice from people who think they know what they're talking about, and they don't. So you see a lot of that, but I think that's part of that transition from college. And you could say the same thing about your transition from college or maybe your first job, maybe your first corporate job. You got to realize that you might have been the stud or the big man on campus, if you will, but now you're in the real world or you're at a different place and you got to work your way up. And that's exactly what happens from high school to college. So –
Well, and I think we'll get to it, but it's one of those things that for you guys at the Division III level that you guys run into all the time, because these kids in high school, they're like, you know, I'm better than this level. And so you're constantly trying to explain, you know, look at the amount of talent that we have in our league. Some of the players that you're going to run up night in and night out, you get them on campus, you get them in pickup, and now all of a sudden it's an eye-opening experience to be like, maybe I'm not better than Division III, and if I am, I'm going to go and sit on the bench. I'm not going to play. I'm going to be out in Western Nebraska and I'm never going to see anybody or know anything. And that, I think that's what's great about your guys' league and that D3 level, is that come compete, play in great venues, have fun, you know, get an education and then take it from there.
I always tell kids, and I actually had a good mentor in high school named, well, obviously Steve Krasison, who's now the head women's coach at DMAC. He was a head coach at NIAC at the time, and he'd been at Iowa State and you know, played at Iowa and North Carolina and two Final Fours, only got to play in the Final Four, two different schools. But he told me at the time, he goes, Brandon, you got to go do things when you're trying to decide a school. And Iowa State recruits this too. Go where you're wanted and go where it feels right. He goes, if you bet 1,000 doing those two, if you go 2 for 2 there, you'll have a good experience no matter where you go. And too many kids, I think, go, well, you know, where the coaching staff really likes you, but the school, the campus, just something in the town, the environment doesn't feel right. Well, that's a red flag in your mind. If you go somewhere where, hey, I love it here, this is everything I want for a school, but the coaches maybe don't want you, then that's a red flag as well. You're not going to have a good experience. So if you go where you're wanted by the coaching staff and go where it feels right as a school, you're going to have a good experience no matter where you go. I think a lot of kids need to realize that instead of listening to maybe their handlers or their uninformed parents or family or whatever. And if they do that, and again, girls, I give our girls staffs around here, that girls have it figured out. The high school girls, those recruits, they make the smart decision. Hey, I'm going to this school because of their biology program. The girls make a decision that's smart. Or, hey, I like just the team and da da da. Guys sometimes want to win the press conference. They want to win. They want to try and announce, I'm going to go to the biggest school. I'm going to get the scholarship offer. And so blessed and honored to receive an offer to say I'm committed to this school. And then guess what? It doesn't work out because it was the biggest school I had on my plate. It didn't work out. Now in January, December, they're calling me saying, hey, Coach Stroh, you still want me? Yeah, we do. Come on, big fella. You know, let's come on home. You know, but you just got to realize that's the nature of the business. And you see a lot of that now. And I don't see it getting any different in the next couple of years. So it's just going to get worse.
I was going to say, it's not going to get any better before it gets worse. That's for sure. Definitely going to have a lot more of that because everyone's looking for the headline. And like you said, want to be able to tweet out that they committed to D2 as
a hashtag so blessed. Yeah. I just can't say it. Thanks, LeBron.
No. So, well, with that, let's stay on that. And as far as you getting into coaching, so obviously the playing days, you guys had some success. I know you won D2 title, right? And,
yep.
06 and then runner up, as you mentioned earlier, the following year. So a ton of success, wanted to stick around or with the game. And so came and got back into the area. Drake, right? Was it operations, director of operations, or how'd you get into coaching, I guess, altogether?
Yeah, it was kind of a weird deal. I knew I wanted to coach. Yeah, my bachelor's was business administration, but I knew from the start that I'd come down and I'd worked a bunch of Drake camps. I knew Justin Ohl had been on staff at Drake, and now Waukee does a great job over there. He was on staff there, and he actually helped us coach. He had been one of our Martin brother coaches at the time with Hank. And so I kind of knew J.O., and I kept calling him saying, hey, I knew I wanted to coach college, but God, it was so tough to get into that, even for a GA spot. So from about my sophomore year to my senior year, I would just call Drake, I'd call you and I, I'd call these staffs and say, hey, do you need help with camps? And I think that would be the biggest advice I would give. I get that question a lot, how do you get into college coaching? Is these guys, it's, everyone wants to be a college coach, but not a lot. Everyone doesn't want to do the work. They want kind of the glamour, the glory of it, but they don't want to do the work to get into there, the day-to-day stuff. And I think there's a lot more day-to-day stuff than people realize. So for you to work a camp at a college, now a coach can kind of, they can kind of try you out. Yeah, they're going to pay you peanuts, but they can try you out. Hey, can you handle this whole floor of fourth graders for the overnight camp? Well, if you can do that, if you can eventually get more responsibility and build a relationship with that staff and with the at that school summer after summer, well, then maybe you have a good chance. Maybe this guy's been good for us last few years at our camps. Maybe we'll give him a shot. And that's kind of what happened. It was a late deal. I was, my wife and I picked out my fiance, girlfriend, if you'll, future wife. We were in Winona, and she followed me to Winona, and we were going to maybe pick out a house. I was going to maybe be on the Winona State staff as a GA, and everything was good to go. And it was Good Friday, and we were going to sign a lease for the place. And the lady we were going to sign a place in Winona says, no, I'm busy Friday. Why don't you just come back? We'll just sign the lease on Monday. Okay. So I go home to Garner for Easter and whatever. And Sunday afternoon, Easter Sunday, we're out around the table and my cell phone rang. And we had those great big, you know, the smaller phones you could just play Snake on. That was about it, you know. My phone rang. You know, the one thing you only used, if you got stuck in a snowstorm, you only used your cell phone. It was one of those back in the day. And it rang, and it was Chris Davis, one of the top assistants at Drake. He's, hey, you've done a great job for our camps back in the years, and we need a GA. Would you be interested in coming down? Well, I guess our plans just changed. We couldn't, you know, can't pass up a Division I chance, and wasn't a lot of money. But that's what you got to realize is you know, if you're going to get into this, you're not going to be making a lot of money right away, and probably not for a while. But again, what you learn, and then that first year, obviously we hit the ground running, and it was a good year to be a great basketball staff. We went 28-5 and a 5-seed in the NCAA tournament. So one of those things, and what you learn at that level, it's just different. Again, Adam, you know, you've seen it. It's just what you learn there is just it's top notch. We work for and with and play for really good coaches. It's just it's next level, in all, you know, all aspects of life. So,
with that Drake team, or on that Drake team, what would you say the difference in that team was? What was so different about that team that made them so good?
I don't know how many letters Emenecker is, but I would just say Emenecker. No, I mean, what's funny with Adam is, I mean, Adam was one of the best leaders I've ever seen. One of those guys, and players don't do this anymore. I hate to give him too much credit because he'll get a big head, and he might listen, and they might text me and give me crap about it. But Emenecker was phenomenal. You know, one of those guys that if you made a mistake or you're lowering, he'd grab you by the jersey and say, hey, pick it up, get your ass down the floor. Something like that, where players now are afraid of that conflict. And it's not conflict, it's just leadership. So Adam was great with that. And we just kind of hit the ground running. Honestly, we kind of caught lightning in a bottle. And any of us that are on that team that say otherwise, we kind of all laughed. Well, man, we just kind of the right team, the right chemistry, the right, I mean, we had Emenecker who we went down to the Bahamas, and our Josh Parker, who is now playing overseas, had a good career at Drake and Dayton. He was going to be maybe our future starting point guard. But freshmen couldn't play on those summer trips, those August summer trips. So we went down to the Bahamas thinking, well, we don't have JP, so maybe Emenecker, you have to fill in for point guard. And they go down there, and he's just killing it down there. We were just a different team when Adam Emenecker at point guard. And it kind of went from there, and Adam went from walk-on to scholarship and walk-on player that year to Missouri Valley Player of the Year. Wins the Larry Bird Trophy. And then, you know, Jonathan Cox, Bucky Cox, he was the same way, a 6'7", 8 long kid from Chicago. He was a walk-on before that year, and Bucky was one of the best players in that league that year. So just a weird deal. You wouldn't think that two walk-ons would be two of the best players in the Valley on a 28-5 team. So, again, I think we just kind of caught lightning in a bottle, and Keno did a phenomenal job, and our coaching staff did a phenomenal job, and it was a year for the memory. So, again, I think from my coaching perspective, yeah, you didn't make a lot of money that year, and they didn't pay us, but, man, you have that on your resume that year and those experiences for the rest of your life professionally. So like that itself is invaluable.
I know you mentioned all the buzzer beaters and the championships and stuff that you lost down the stretch, but one thing that I'm picking up on is that you have a knack for being able to surround yourself with the right people and get yourself in these situations, from obviously your high school team and what you guys had, and then going and that Drake team and being around Keno to even now, obviously Brad, and your head coach now at Simpson, great head coach, great guy. And so you definitely have a knack for being able to put yourself in the right situation.
Yeah, I've been lucky, and you know, we have a phenomenal staff. Brad Bjorken's one of the best coaches in the game, and he's one of the best basketball minds. And our staff is pretty unique between myself, Brad, and then Chris McMahon, who spent time at Drake. He had a lot of success at Roosevelt, when Roosevelt. So now three of us are on staff, and it's been a fun time. And basically, three guys who definitely could run their own programs. And we have some interesting conversations and arguments back and forth about what the right thing to do is. But it's been a great staff, and we always do what's best for the guys and for best for the team. It's been a lot of fun. And, you know, going back on your comment about good coaches with Keno, but I think one of the guys who's been the most influential for me in my career was actually Mark Felt, who didn't get enough credit at Drake for what he did, because guess what? He just followed Keno, and you're not 20-5, and suddenly the Drake boosters think, well, we got to do that every year. Well, they don't realize how tough that is to go 20-5, and even to get 20 wins at Drake every year is tough. And again, the current staff's done a phenomenal job, but I probably learned more about this business from Mark Phelps than anybody. So I worked my way up. So Keno went to Providence after our 1 year, and then Mark came in and didn't have to keep us. And I learned so much from him, and he was one of the best recruiters in the country in college basketball, hands down, just kind of learning how to do things and do the extraordinary, you know, little things extraordinarily well on that, and how to treat people and how to build relationships, I think, with not only your team, but also your recruits and their inner circle. It was tough. Mark would hold your feet to the fire and expect the best from you. And it was a stressful couple of years, but man, what I learned. And again, he's a good friend of mine, and he'd do anything for me. But again, it was really good for me in my career to work for those guys. Again, even now with Brad, but yeah, it's something from Mark. Just Mark taught me how to recruit, if you will. Be diligent. Don't be afraid to call that phone and say, hey, give me the phone. Who do I got to call to get this thing done? One of the best pieces of advice he gave me was, I mean, when I'm director of ops, you got to order hotels, you got to order your private jets, you got to order the buses, and there can be a lot of things that go wrong. You know, whether the manager saying, hey, we don't have enough room for your table, or at a restaurant. Well, why? And one of the best things he taught me is, people tell you no because out of laziness. If they don't know, it's a no. Poke and prod that. Peel that next layer back. Why is it a no? Is it because you're too lazy to make it a yes, or why? Is it really a no? And now I've kind of, it drives my wife nuts at a restaurant if I do that now. It's one of the things you can't turn off. It kind of made me. You kind of are who you work for sometimes, you know, those first couple of years coaching. And I'm still a little bit at that marketing. Going, well, why is it like this? No matter where it might be, but it helps you career-wise. It helps you. We might be somewhere and might get something. Our guy's emailing, oh boy, here comes Stro. Yep, the Stro's going to come out. Something's going to happen. He's going to peel back that first onion of why is it a no? I always try to do what's best for our team. You got to kind of treat your team like racehorses, whether it be on the road or pregame. And you know, if your racehorses are fed healthy, they're going to fed well. They're going to hopefully perform well in game day. So that's kind of what I've taken from the coaching over the years. But again, I've been really fortunate, like you said, to work for and play for some really good coaches. And again, playing wise, Tom Brown and Chris Goh, if you look at what they're doing at West Texas A&M, they're two of the best. All you got to do is Google West Texas A&M, and you'll see the success that they've had with Quincy Henderson and one of my former teammates. They're really getting it done in Division II down there as well. So I've been fortunate to be around some really good basketball lines over the years.
I will say one thing with Phelps. He certainly could recruit his ass off. So this is from a distance. Obviously been a Drake basketball fan for quite a while, but that guy could recruit his ass off, and he got some talent on campus that I obviously have seen maybe a little bit more of that here recently. But when you have Rivante, and then who's the other kid that went up to Minnesota? I mean, guys that are coming in there and playing for a year or two, and then obviously getting pulled away to go play in the Big Ten. I mean, that speaks to what he was able to do as a recruiter. On the other side of things, I think from, like you said, a booster, I mean, whether it was expectations, the one thing that I noted, again, my words, not yours, is that with Phelps, he never wore blue. Like, it was one of those things that, like, he never wore blue. It felt like, I know he was grinding because he was getting these kids on campus, making it work. From the public eye of things, it's like, is this dude all in Drake or not? I think that was the one caveat that maybe had him a little sideways with the boosters.
Well, you know, I think he accumulated a lot of red being at NC State and a lot of Arizona State, you know, a lot of that darker maroon red, you know, at the time. But no, Mark was, again, he was great to work for, and he kind of taught me how to do things the next level up, if you will. And those first couple of years are tough because you still have that player's mentality, that player mindset. You don't really understand. You're still all you are is a former player, a former college player. But Mark really made me realize, okay, now you got to look at things on the other end of things and the organizational part, and you kind of see things. And actually, I teach a coaching class, and some of the things I teach in that coaching class every fall is, hey, you play tomorrow at 10 p.m. or at 7 p.m. in Indianapolis. You got to leave from Des Moines. What time are you leaving that night? What time are you – we'll look at logistically what do you got to do, and then they'll say, "Oh, we'll leave Des Moines at noon." Okay, so you're gonna hit Chicago at 5 p.m. with your charter bus. Good luck. Nice try over there. So, a little logistically thing that really helped me, the organization for leading a team and getting teams to the airport. I kind of bragged that I can get about 30 people through the airport line in about 7 minutes flat. Just not to do it, you know, after a while. So, because if I wasn't doing it, he was on my rear going, "Hey, you got to get these guys through. Let's go." So you kind of learn to. I'm not the most fun to probably travel with. My wife will attest to that because I don't like holdups. But again, it's one of those things you just can't turn off once you're kind of what your mind is. So, but yeah, Mark, again, I got all the respect in the world for Mark, and he really helped me and has helped me with everything that if I needed it. So, got a lot of respect for him.
So, good. Let's talk a little bit. So twofold here, obviously, with Simpson. One, I want to talk recruiting. I know we talked a little bit about it, but two sides on this. So one, obviously, recruiting now and how things are different, COVID-19 and everything we have going on in our world. But then two, also talking a little bit about, recruiting to that Division III level and how things are a little bit different, obviously, on the scholarship side for you guys and overcoming some of those hurdles. And this might be three, and this might be the Warburg Knight in me, but also how do you guys recruit to that gym that you guys are playing in? I feel like you could get more kids on campus if you guys played in Hopper, if you guys played up in the Hopper gym.
Hey, come on now. No, we've done some good renovations in Kohl's, and you haven't seen our weight room. You got to come down. You got to see we got some good stuff going on down here. But no, you know, recruiting wise, I had a coach for a long time. Now he's a Division I head coach, but at the time when I knew him, I asked him, I said, how do you do Division III recruiting? This is my first year at Simpson. He goes, you cannot work people at this level. You can, if you show kids more love than the other coach, you'll get them. And I try to do that. I try to, you know, we kind of, with Phelps, we used to call it on our staff at Drake, we used to call them body blows. Body blows like a boxer. Enough body blows, that boxer's going to fall. So enough handwritten letters, enough text messages, enough calls, you know, little hits like that, the box will eventually fall and the kid will eventually commit. I think a lot of coaches, and again, I'm being brutally honest, a lot of coaches will call maybe and have a 30-minute conversation. Well, now that first conversation's good, but now that, say that kid's with his girlfriend, or he's with his bunch of friends, and he answers, sees Coach Stromer calling or Coach whoever calling, he says, I don't know if I want to be on the phone with that guy for 30 more minutes. I got things to do. When I try to call, I try to do 4-minute calls, 4 or 5-minute calls, just checking in. You got to try and mess with kid. You know, a lot of times if a kid misses my call, I'll say, I'll leave a message, which kids don't check voice, and they don't have to set up anymore. It drives me crazy, but that's neither here nor there. But I'll call and say, they missed my calls. I'll leave a voicemail. Hey, man, quit cuddling with your girlfriend and give me a call back, okay? Now they call me back all defensive. Coach, no, coach, it's not like that. I wasn't doing that, man. So you got to kind of mess with kids. Have fun with them and build that relationship and get them to trust you. I don't know if I really talk about basketball the first 2 or 3 weeks that I even talk to them. I just kind of get to know them, know their families, and know their routine, their schedules. You know, their girlfriends, their siblings, what they like to do, their parents, stuff like that, and build that relationship first. Then there's plenty of time that you can talk basketball, sell Simpson, sell your program, sell stuff like that. So I think that's important, is build that relationship first. Now when that kid comes on campus, they trust you and you're kind of in their corner and they know you'll go to bat for them, and you know that you have their back. And that's kind of what I try to instill. And a lot of those kids, you might lose to a Division II or an NAI and they call you and they're crying. Because you've made that much of an impact. That's kind of your goal. If you don't get them and they cry and go somewhere else, and what we talked about a half hour ago, if all of a sudden it doesn't work out at that school, they'll call you and say, I remember Coach Stromer, Coach Bjork, and Coach McMahon, we had a good relationship with that staff in high school. I think I'm going to go there. Now, remember, they went to where it felt right, but they weren't wanted necessarily. Whether it didn't work out, whether they had an injury or they weren't good enough, or it just wasn't the right fit for them. Well, now Simpson's still with their arms wide open wanting you to come there, and that's what kind of happened. We get a lot of D2 and NAI transfers over the years. It's really been a good part of our success. So
I definitely think that's one advantage you guys have, being where you're located. Obviously, relatively close to the metro, as you get some of those kids who want to come back home, and Simpson's the perfect fit. And obviously, I give you a hard time, but you guys got nice facilities and everything down there. My second cousin is Rick Isaacson. He's the coach. So
full disclosure, Rick was on my office about 10 minutes before we started.
Nice. So, no, Rick's one of the good ones. Funny dude too, that's for sure. But
yeah, he's a good friend of mine. So yeah, it's we have a great staff down here, great athletic staff, and yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, our location is really good. I mean, we're 25 minutes from West Des Moines, probably 10 minutes from down, 15 minutes from downtown, 10 minutes from the airport. I mean, we're fortunate for that. And actually, a big area for our recruiting has been Kansas City. We want to do Iowa and Des Moines too, but also Kansas City. Even if you want to go Kansas City, Omaha, Omaha is hours away, and KC, I can get to the south side of KC in about 3 hours. So a lot of those kids that are pretty high academic, pretty talented players, even down there, they get out of the car and going, "Well, that was only 3 hours away, and I'm in Iowa." So we probably have had a third to half our team, our roster size, be from Kansas City, Missouri area over the years. A lot of Lawrence, Kansas, stuff like that. So a lot of talent in that area, and we've been able to, because of being so close to the metro area, you know, a kid doesn't want to always go somewhere, a smaller town, kind of in the middle of nowhere, especially an out-of-state kid. So we're lucky to say, hey, we have a metro area in our backyard, and we kind of take advantage of that. So.
Awesome.
Sorry, one other question here. I spoke with Coach Staggy a little bit.
I knew he was going to get in. I knew this was coming. I don't know what it is, but I know something's going to come.
Yeah, so Coach Staggy obviously was like, hey, ask Strom about the kid that went bonkers at Wartburg this year, who definitely leveled up or something. I guess he hadn't shot the ball all that well and then shows up to Levick Arena or something and goes nuts.
No, we've had Coach Stagg and I, we're good friends. We got some good coaches in our league besides the head coaches. I mean, with Jason Staggy and Paxton Molinari, we got some guys that really do things the right way. Some good coaches in our league, and Paith and Brian Martin do phenomenal jobs as well too. And it's, you know, no coincidence we're real good friends with those guys. They just do a nice job, and they're good people. But yeah, so we had kind of a rough stretch. Just the storm and the nights. We were had a rough week and a half, 2 weeks for whatever reason. It was getting late in the year, and Coach Stagg and I walked to half court during warmups, and we just kind of looked like we were both just exhausted from the year. Our whole staffs were. Dick looked, he was tired too, and it was one of those things. Well, who's going to win this game? I don't know. We don't shoot worth the damn right now. Oh, you don't either. I don't know. And Kyle Wagner, I don't think Kyle Wagner threw it in the ocean right now, that last 2 weeks. If Kyle's listening, Kyle, you couldn't shoot very well the last couple of weeks. You know, I love him to death, but it's that relationship. I can say that to Kyle because I built a relationship with him. He knows I love him. But Kyle just went off. So I said, Jason, I said, I don't know if I'd even guard Wagner tonight. And I don't know if I was totally serious. I don't think I was, you know, a lot of people say it tongue in cheek, just don't guard him. I don't think I would have guarded Kyle the way he was shooting lately. And then Kyle just went off. He went off, and every time there was a three, I could just feel, you know how sometimes you feel when your wife is staring you down a little bit? I felt Staggy looking down at me like, really, Stro? Really? And again, we played well, and actually we kind of pulled it out. We were struggling to find a spot, and actually the Knights and the storm kind of pulled it out here the last 2 weeks of that. We made the tournament and had a good couple weeks after that. But that was kind of the turning point for us, at least shooting as a team. And yeah, Staggy was the that wasn't a story. A couple stories I thought he was going to say, so I'll go with that one.
You never know what Staggy's going to throw out there. I said you'll never know what Staggy's going to throw out there. He gets all fired up.
Yep.
That's a great story. That's a great story. Well, hey, Coach, we end our podcast, as you probably know, with a segment we call Rapid Fire, where Brian's just going to hit you with a couple questions, and you answer those just with whatever pops in your mind.
Whatever pops in.
Easy good stuff.
Deal. Yep.
All right, first one, usually easy one, usually not all that rapid either, but favorite gym you've ever played or coached in?
Can I do three levels? Can I do D1 through D3? D1, yep. I might say, and Adam can appreciate this. I don't know if it was favorite, but Wichita State's arena, different world, isn't it, man? From the arena to the airport there, that about 5-minute drive, your ears are still ringing after.
Absolutely.
After that happens, and my first year, it was tough.
I say all the time that's the loudest arena I've ever played in my entire 5 years of college. So loud.
I'm not sure we ever played there either. I mean, year, I think my first year, Drake was, I think Marshall's first year as well, and they struggled that year, and then they quickly turned it around pretty quick after. D2, I want to say probably Northern States Arena with Don Meyer. It had that Knapp Center or bigger, you know, maybe the McLeod Center or that kind of size arena for Division II. Because up there, I mean, it's a size of, you know, not a lot in South Dakota around that Aberdeen, but once you're in town there, it's the size of about Ames. They like their basketball and they're passionate about their basketball. And you got Don Meyer on the sidelines. My first year playing, we're up there playing. I'm running down the court and I hear the coach is yelling at himself and holding something in his hand. Well, Don Meyer, the legend that he is, he was recording his thoughts into a tape recorder. Then before halftime, he would play him over again, and then he would just let his team know whether he's cussing him or giving him props, whatever it is. But he would talk in the recorder during the game so that he'd record his thoughts. But yeah, we had these candy cane. Now, I remember the Indiana Hoosier, the old candy cane warm up pants. We had those at Winona, but they were black and purple. And we'd come to those arenas, and we were getting pretty good at the time. They were pretty good as well. They hated us, and we loved it. We'd walk out with those candy cane stripe, purple and black stripe, and the whole crowd booed us and went nuts. And you know how it is. You thrive on that stuff. It was just great. For Division III, you know, probably, I hate to say it, but I really kind of like playing at Loras. Really do. The Loras gym, it's kind of like a mini McLeod Center, but at the same time, it's – I don't know. Wartburg's got a good gym. You know, I'm going to change my vote. I'm going to go Coe. I'm going to go Cohawks. Coe's got a good gym. We've actually had a lot of success there, where I think the road team has won that series the last 3 years, I think. The road team has always been the winner the last 3 years. They played well over here, and we've always played well over there. And there are some good gyms, though. I mean, between Wesleyan and again, the Loras, the Wartburgs, we got some pretty good gyms around the conference. For that, but yeah, I'm gonna go with Coe just because we've always played well there. We really have.
The facilities in your guys' league have changed a lot since 2006-2007 when I was there. That's for sure.
And honestly, it has to, because you're trying to keep pace with some other schools and actually high school. Look at some of these high school gyms, Waukee, Centennials, and the Johnstons. You got to kind of keep pace with some of these kids because they're playing some pretty nice high schools in high school. So. You got to keep pace with it, and we're fortunate to have some pretty good facilities here in the school. So, again, that was a terrible three-part answer, but that's my answer. I'm sticking to it.
No, I love it. I'm actually going to change this question. I'm going to ask you, what happens if Derrick Rose doesn't blow out his knee? What does his career look like?
You're looking behind me, aren't you? You can see the Rose jersey. You know, he's just the power he had in that first step. I don't know if it would be that much better, but it would be definitely a different. I think he'd have more. He might have a championship. He might have a ring here or there. He might have gone. Probably would have teamed up with somebody down the road with one of the dynasties. And you can see the Wayne Gretzky one behind me too. The Wayne. I'm not a hockey fan, but we actually played one. We had Wayne's nephew at Simpson, Dylan Gretzky, his nephew there. So, you know, hey Dylan, hook me up. Give me your uncle's autograph. That happened. So, yeah, big. I'm not necessarily a hockey fan, but I'm a big Gretzky family fan. So, a family from Grinnell, they're good people. So, yeah, that's
a great one.
That's the story behind there.
Yeah. Well, perfect. We talked a little bit before we jumped on, but when I take my next, let's call it 10,000th trip through Gardner, where do I need to stop? I think I've only been to Hardee's. Is there someplace else that it would be worth me stopping?
Ooh, you know, you might want to go Matt's Place. Matt's Place, a little bit of hole-in-the-wall dive bar. But, man, talk about breakfast, good breakfast spot in the morning. I might actually go my mother's kitchen, too. It's on the east side, out in the country, east side of Garner, about between Ventura and Garner. Pretty good food there. You're not going to find some of the best food in the town there. But, yeah, just with Garner, make sure you stop at that one stoplight in town because you'll miss it quick. But I'd go Matt's Place. Pretty good breakfast.
Good.
So it's no Ackley, but you know what is. So,
you brought this up earlier too, but I got to ask to put it on the record. What's your favorite basketball shoe?
I'm gonna go with even though they've been tough to me. I'm gonna go with the 14s, Jordan's 14s. I had a pair of the Jordan 14s, and I had a pair of the 15s. And the 15s had that like canvas wrap around the shoe and all the way up the ankle. I thought in my stupid high school mind that it would give me more support. No, I still roll my damn ankles doing that too. Then I think the year after that, I had the white Kobe's, those like thick leather padded, like those thick padded shoes out there. They're really wide. I had a pair of the white Kobe's. So again, the Jordan 14, they were great to wear, but man, I rolled my ankle a ton in those damn things.
So were they the white and red ones, or which ones did you have?
No, I had the white and Carolina blue, the little blue things on the side. I had the Carolina blue ones. They were pretty big time. When you had a flat top, you got to try and overcompensate for other areas to offset the flat top. So that was I was doing the best I could here.
Smart move.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
Well, and those white and Carolina ones, those were the actual lows too. So those were even lower than the normal 14.
I know. So. Oh, and they might. Yeah. I think my ankles are still swollen around the ankle bone from those things. They were good though. They were big time.
That's great. No. So if you were not coaching basketball, then what would you be doing?
Oh, it's so tough because I've always wanted to do this. And I'm just, again, I don't think I've always wanted to be at the college level. I mean, any basketball enthusiast could probably say, you could do it at the basketball's basketball at the high school. I just don't ever see myself at the high school level. I mean, a lot of times I don't know if I relate to our guys. I recruit them well, but, you know, I'm kind of been a college guy my whole life the last 15, 20 years. And I don't know if I have my business degree, but God, going even our business administration stuff, I did the course. I passed the course. We're fine. Got the degree, but I never really saw myself doing anything but doing this. So it's just a really different deal. And the best part about coaching, again, I'm deflecting your answer here because I really don't know I don't think I would be doing anything else. But what, you know, living in West Des Moines, I live just by Wells Fargo. I'm not blasting anybody that works at Wells Fargo because you're making a lot more money than I am. I walk by there and these guys, I see these people getting out of their cars and they're kind of walking down, their head down, like they're zombies going into the office. Like, here we go. It's Monday. And Sunday night, they just dread the next day. I got to work tomorrow and it's a long time till Friday. And I don't ever do that. You know, so I don't know. Why not make it as much as they are? But Sunday night, I'm like, okay, I got to do this tomorrow, this tomorrow, this tomorrow. Or maybe you're working through Saturday and Sunday. I mean, I was a kid, you know, recruiting wise this time of year, you're working 7 days a week all the way through. Mm-hmm. And it's what you do and what you love. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people don't understand about coaching is you're putting in the hours, you know, you're putting in sometimes 60 to 80 hours and only getting paid for 40, if not 20 of them, if you will, for what you do. But it's one of those things you got to do what you love. And I just don't see myself being on the clock and working that. I'd rather work a 12-hour day when I want than work an 8-hour day when you tell me to. And that's one of the best things. I tell my class that. Like, the stuff we do, I mean, we're always on your phones. I mean, my wife gives me a ton of crap about it, but you're always on your phone texting a recruiter, coach, or whatever at night. It might be midnight, and I have a recruit right now coming from Missouri. He'll text me about 10:30 at night, 11 o'clock. Yo, coach, got a question. All right, what's up? What do you got, Deontay? What do you got? So it's just stuff like that. It's always, hey, you got a minute? Sure. What do you got? So it's stuff like that that really is fun and building those relationships. I'm not sure you could always do in the corporate world with college age guys. And again, sometimes in college, there's not much difference between a college kid and a fifth grader. I jokingly say that, but I don't know what, yeah. So I don't know what I would be doing, but I'm going to take the easy way out and say I did never see myself doing something other than this. Believe it or not.
I think you're the first person that has actually refused to answer that question. I think Coach Slava from Cornell was, I don't think he really answered it, but he kind of tried to answer, I think. But when I say that, that's a pretty awesome story though. I mean, it's never really had another thought about doing anything else. And now you're doing this thing. And that's pretty awesome in my opinion.
We kind of, a lot of my coaching friends, we kind of joke, but the skills that we learn coaching, it's kind of a shame because we could be making 3 or 4 times more in getting paid for it. I mean, the personable skill. I mean, think of the stuff you learn as a coach. You're got to be the rainmaker sometimes, a miracle worker for this kid. You got to be education. You got to be sales. You got to be marketing. You got to be management. You got to do all that stuff. All that stuff that goes into coaching, whether it be high school or college, you got to have a lot of those skills that a lot of people are being paid a lot of money for. And here we are. But again, I mean, we love what we do, and that's why we do it, and that's why we put in the hours. And again, it's all about the kids at the end of the day, and having a good experience, kind of stuff. You know, that's kind of always been my goal as a coach is give my players the experience that I had as a player in college and in high school. And that's kind of what you go. And then obviously they do big things after college. So I'm refusing to answer. That's my final answer. I'm not answering it. I gave you my answer.
So you mean to tell me if you came apart or you came upon some land back around Gardner, you're not going to give it up to go sit on the tractor and become a farmer or what?
See, now you're going to get me in trouble with my hometown. I got to run a camp up there every year. No, I would probably as much as it wouldn't work out. I remember that black sheep of the family. I wouldn't fit well in a tractor. I mean, I'm 6'8", 6'7". John Deere doesn't make those kind of big tracks. I just couldn't do it. So I'm going to say no to that as well. So as appealing as that might be, and my family would not be surprised whatsoever by that answer, but my wife would make a good farmer's wife. Let's put it that way. My wife likes the West Des Moines suburbs right now.
Perfect. Well, and we've kind of went round and round with this, but give us the quick elevator pitch or what's your favorite part about Simpson College?
You know, it really is a great place with great people. And it's, I always kind of tell, you know, if you haven't been to campus, we've got a beautiful campus, beautiful facilities. But mainly what kids need to do, and this is a little after school special for all kids looking at schools. Look at what a school, don't, a lot of kids look for what a school can do for you next 2 or 3 years, 4 years from now. Well, okay, everyone wants to go and have a good career somewhere and win championships and get a degree. But a lot of times look for what a school can do for you 6 or 7 or 8 years from now. I think Simpson does that better than anybody as far as getting you lined up with a internship, maybe by after your sophomore, junior year, get two or three internships, because a lot of those internships, they come into jobs after they're done playing. It's not uncommon for a player on campus or in the gym to say, hey, Stroke, can I use your office for a minute? Well, yeah, what do you need to do? I need to return a phone call to my internship boss. Yeah, sure, use my office. And 10 minutes later, they'll come out and they look just shocked. So what happened? They just offered me a job for 50, 60, 70K next year. So they still have their senior year to play. It's fall, their senior year, and they already know what they're going to do. They're already accepting a job after college. That's what it's about. You want to go and win and have championships and have the college experience, but you also want to have that first career job, hit the ground running, and get your feet wet right away. And I think that's what it's about. I think Simpson does a great job with that. And again, part of that's our location. We can give kids good internships, but also we've had impressive kids over the last couple of years we've been here. And well, I've been here 10 years, but we've had some really successful kids. And even this last year, we led the nation in NABC All Academic Awards. We had 11. So we had 11 all kind. We led the league. Last year we led the league too. And part of that, the caveats, we have 11. We have juniors and seniors are only eligible. We've had a lot of juniors and seniors, but at the same time, we've had impressive kids. And I like to say we're cracking the whip and we're throwing the hammer down academically. No, we don't. We have some rules, but we just are recruiting really good, talented kids who are pretty good students and pretty good kids. We really are. Now, they need to be pretty good athletes. Don't get me wrong. We can be a good 30 ACT and 4.0. That's great, but you got to be able to play a little bit too, and our guys can do both, and they're just good kids. They really are. So I think that'd be the thing is you want to come here with a great 4 years and have a family atmosphere and play for great coaches like myself, Coach Bjorken, and Coach McMahon, and a good Simpson community, and we'll help you set up for life after college as well. Get you set up for the road to success down the road.
Well, good. Last one, and I promise we'll get you out of here. We have basketball back at the highest level. Who's gonna win the NBA championship this year?
I've been trying to watch some of that bubble games on TV right now, and I don't know, man. I hadn't watched the 76ers last night. Watched the Celtics a couple of nights before that, and I don't know. I've always kind of been a big Suns fan back in the day with Thunder Dan, Marley, and Barkley, and Kevin Johnson, Wayman Tisdale. I was always a big Suns fan there, so maybe that I don't think they have a shot, but maybe in the future years they get a few more good draft picks. But I've always been kind of a Suns fan, to be honest with you. So
that's great. No, they're fun to watch. They've come up on the pod a couple times as that team, obviously down pushing to make the playoffs, but just a lot of fun to watch, a lot of talent. So
I'm just glad the average kid, college kid through high school, got a chance to watch the Michael Jordan stuff, watch the dynasty, and kind of appreciate that. And there are a few guys on our team that say, hey, Stro, I know we've been talking about the Jordan LeBron thing. Yeah, our bad. Like Jordan, like, you think? Not even close, boys. You couldn't script that in a movie. Wow. You couldn't. If Spielberg came out with that movie, you'd say, come on. That's not real. How we pushed off at the end of the Jazz. Come on. You didn't. That's not real. It is. So I'm glad kids are finally seeing what it was really like.
We might have to bring you back for another podcast about that specifically. Then.
There you go.
With that on Netflix now, it's out on Netflix. So now everybody can go watch it and rewatch it and watch it again. So hopefully that definitely starts to tip the scale towards MJ for the future.
Best part of the whole deal was Rodman going to Vegas. And Jordan goes, you're going to let this dude go to Vegas? Well, and again, it goes back to the coaching thing. And I tell my coaching classes, sometimes it's not like, it's not the whole team this or everyone's equal here. You can't, if things have changed like that. Bill just knew, hey, Dennis, we were going to lose Dennis for the betterment of the team or hurt the team, or we're going to have Dennis a weekend off. I mean, some of those guys, you just got to – they're weird like that. And some college kids are like, hey, I need a break here or there. And, okay, I mean, for the betterment of the team. Because, yeah, guys want to be – everyone being equal, but also guys want to win. And if it meant their best player gets his mind right for a weekend and comes back ready to go, I think everyone wants to win. I think guys would be for that. So Phil understood that, which is the genius of Phil Jackson. Like, okay, right. Go lose your mind in Vegas. But – and guess what? He didn't come back, did he? So – I give Phil credit for letting him go, I guess. Yeah. So
he said he came back and was running circles around everybody ready to go. So he's
one of those dudes. Let him play hard and have fun, work hard, play hard. So
well, perfect, Coach. Hey, we appreciate you coming on, appreciate all the insight, taking some time with us, obviously chopping it up a little bit. We've been following along. I know you've been following along with us as well, and so it's been fun to see your guys' growth and continued growth, and we'll keep watching, and hopefully all things. Have you had any news as far as what things look like? I mean, was season look promising at this point?
And actually, we're one of the few. I think we're one of five schools now officially of the Division III leagues are actually going to play fall sports. It's going to be a modified schedule, but we're going to play fall sports, and that was great news. And again, things can maybe change here in the next month or two. Obviously, by COVID weeks, COVID months, seems like about every COVID month seems like 6 months with what can change and week by week. But we're ready to play. And I think just coaches want to know what the schedule is and who they can play. I know soccer is going to do a round robin type style, and football is going to maybe do a few games here or there. And but it's good. I think we need to you know, have a risk mitigation, if you will. And again, not to get politically and stuff, but you know, got to take a risk here or there in some of that stuff, but also be careful as well. So I understand both sides of that thing. So I'm just glad we're playing some sports this fall, and hopefully we as basketball start on time and kind of keep things going, because it's going to be another good year in the American Rivers.
Yeah, well, we hope so too, Coach. And you know, as Brian said, we appreciate you coming on. You know, we're obviously, our fingers are crossed that we can get some basketball back in our lives here very, very soon, especially collegiate basketball. And to all of our listeners, we appreciate you listening again. You know, follow us on any social media platform, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Shooters Touch IA. And wherever you listen to your podcasts, if you like the podcast, feel free to give us a 5-star rating. And always remember, shooters shoot.